They have evidence that there were people living in the Yucatan at 8,000 BC. But you see, they were just little family groups. And then, by and by, they domesticated agriculture so that they had leisure time. They didn't have to go out and hunt all the time. And so then they had time to develop as a culture, and they moved into what you call a village culture period. And then they became actual city-states that had a political power. Hi.
Hi.
And they had spread all through what's called this whole section. Why don't you grab one of these things? This is the Maya world, and give her one of those too. We'll do this kind of informally if it's just so you can just work your way around. You can look up here and see where you are. See, this is the high priest's grave. And it's really jungly when you walk into it.
Wow.
Like that. Snaky country. Right, snaky country.
Deadly snakes?
Deadly snakes, yeah. You stay on the path.
They Isn't have a little scary to go
battle
there?
Snakes. You don't go off through the bushes. There is a path in there, and any self-respecting snake, you know, is not going to stay where people are. Mm-hmm. They're not usually aggressive.
Well, of sacrifice? So they did human sacrifice?
Well, there's few people in it, yeah.
And people didn't swim, or were they bound?
No, they were sacrificial victims. Sometimes it was young virgins, sometimes it was children. Sometimes they were captives that had been taken during wartime.
These are nice pictures. Did you take these?
Uh-huh. I don't have as many slides of Chichen Itza as I do with the other sites. And so that's why I put these still pictures around here. They'd probably be a little bit more interesting to you after you have seen the slides that I have.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi there. Well, read this pie out. Hello there. Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful.
Would you like to
You need to have a little map.
Okay. Yep. We all will.
So you know where you are, you know.
I see Tabasco. I know it's on the table over there.
I think that I'll just start here so that you don't waste.
Did you ring the bell?
Well, mm-hmm. The young man who did the storytelling rang the bell, and they were both for the same thing.
Well,
wait a few more minutes. I'll peek out and see if anyone's coming.
Oh, Doris said she might come down.
Well, we'll wait. She's saying there's someone else coming. I don't see a little one out there,
but it's good to find one. Yeah. Felt the test mine.
Okay, well, you've got a map like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you where it is up here.
Oh, I think I brought it with me today.
Don't let me interrupt you.
No.
You recognize this is Mexico.
Okay. Yucatan.
And what you have in your hand is this little piece right here. And this is where the Maya culture flourished. It flourished in this area. And their big years were from about 250 AD to 900 AD. But there were settlers in this area in 8,000 BC. The hunters and gatherers that came over from Siberia on the land bridge had drifted clear down to the farthest point of South America by 9,500 BC. But the people that lived here then were just hunters and gatherers, and they finally became a village culture. And then as time went on, they became more sophisticated in their government, and they developed civilizations that were so awesome that when the Spanish came, they thought that those cities had been built by the nine tribes of Israel. You see, they thought it had to have had some connection with Europe, that these people could not have done it themselves. But it has been proved that these were indigenous people, and their cultures were developed by those people over time. Interesting thing about these people, this is quite a distance here, but even though they were just small communities, they all spoke the same language.
That's unreal.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there were different dialects in different areas, but they spoke the same language. They had the same calendar system. They had the same systems of religion. So that tended to keep their culture protected in that it didn't change a whole lot from the 200 AD clear up to 900 AD. It just began to roll along and become more and more complicated and more of a flourishing and flowering culture. Now, they didn't always get along. Some of them were bigger than others. Oops. If you look at your map there, you'll find that there are some arrows coming down in there. Those were important cities. And if you go down below into the place where it says Paytain and Guatemala, some of those were big cities too. The ones that I have underlined are Carigua, and there's one called Copan down in Honduras. And then you see a strange spelling, U-A-X-A-C-T-U-N, Washaktun and Tikal. They were all big city-states. And the smaller ones looked to them for protection. They intermarried within the tribes, and through that intermarriage, they kind of kept peace with one another. I'd like to hand that to you. So we have taken care of all the cultures here. We've been to Palenque, we've been to Uxmal, we've been to Washaktun, and we've been to Tikal, Palenque, and now we are at Chichen Itza. See if you can find that. Chichen Itza. Now, the more you read about Chichen Itza, the more confused you get sometimes. Because the archaeological evidence there somehow got all messed up. You know, when you work as an archaeologist and you take pieces out of a place where they're found, they have to be tagged so that the people who come after the first excavators know where those pieces belong. Well, what happened in the case of Chichen Itza was that the cockroaches ate the tags because of where they had them, and so they didn't know where the different pieces went. And so it's been very difficult for the archaeological evidence to be put together because so many things were out of place. Now when the Spanish came, now we're clear in this period right now. We're down here. We're in the classic Maya period, but we're principally at Chichen Itza in this area right here, where you come, it's 600 AD to 900 AD was the time when Chichen Itza was really flourishing. And they have a wonderful little history that they put together, and they told it to the Spanish friars, and the Spanish friars wrote it down. And it's called the Book of Chilambalam. And in the Book of Chilambalam, they tell a very nice little story, just like we tell about the Indians, you know. Huh? We have a way of smoothing off history so we don't sound quite so bad. And they did too. In the Book of Chilambalam, it says that in the year 450, the Itza settled in Chichen Itza. Now, Chichen is an interesting word because the Chi part of it means mouth, and the Chen part of it means well. So, what that name, Chichen Itza, means is at the mouth of the well of the Itza. Now, Itza is the name of the tribe. And that word has a meaning too. Itza means people who speak in a strange tongue. So you have this place that is the mouth of the well belonging to the people who speak in a strange tongue. So
by the mouth of the well, do they mean the opening?
The edge of the well, right. This is a great limestone shelf. This whole upper part, the whole Yucatan Peninsula, is a limestone shelf. And they don't have wells there. And if you notice on your map, you don't see any rivers. You have to get way down in the southern part of that peninsula before you find any rivers. So the wells that they had were really what they called cenotes. And these were places where the limestone shelf had collapsed. And underneath it were aquifers. And that was where they got their water. And if they didn't happen to be in a place where there were any cenotes, then they caught water, rainwater. That's all the water that they had. So this is a very interesting area insofar as the geography of it is concerned and the geology of it is concerned. So these people settled where there was water. And that's why you have Chichen Itza being where it is. It was at the mouth of the well where the Itza lived. Now the Itza tell this story, that they settled there in 465, and they lived there for 200 years, and then they went away. Now you should be able to find on your map a place I wrote in called Champotan. You see that? No, I guess it's printed in there. It's on the Gulf Coast. You find Champotan?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, in the Book of Chilambalam, it says that for some reason or other, they left Chichen Itza, and they went to Champotan, and they stayed there for 260 years. Well, now, we don't know what they thought was going on over there after they left, you see. And then they say that in the 800s, about 850, they went back to Chichen Itza and resettled in this place, and their culture developed around here. Now, that's the historical record, but the archaeological record is different. It says that the Itza never left. They were always there. They were always there. But they didn't, you know, they didn't develop to any great extent. They built a part of the buildings on this site. But they just were always there. They didn't go away. And that they were the Shantal Maya is what they really were. And they were traders. And that what happened was that instead of the Itza coming back, the people that came back were people from Mexico. In other words, about that time that the Itza say that they came back to Chichen Itza, what really happened was that over here there had been a squabble between two factions in the Toltec world, and one faction had been kicked out. And so the leader came along here with his group of people, and they marched on in, and they took Chichen Itza away from the people who were there.
Is this called just hilly land in the...
Flat.
Flat.
Flat is a piece of paper.
The whole peninsula?
Yes, this is very flat. The only raised place right here is a little place called the Pook Hills, and that's where you see that little cluster of things. So, it's really confusing to read about the Itza, because in one place, the historical evidence says this, and the other place, the archaeological evidence says, no, that's not quite the way it was. The way it happened was that the Toltecs came in, and they mixed in with the Shantal Maya, who were the Itza, and the cultures blended together, but things changed. Things changed. The architecture changed, the religious structure changed. It became much more militaristic. Human sacrifice increased. The art became much more brusque and blunt. And you had an entirely different world here in this particular time.
Now, are the Mayas primarily on the peninsula,
mm-hmm.
and the Toltecs come from the Mexico?
They came from here, you uh-huh. see. Uh-huh. The thing that happened was that there were two leaders among the Toltecs. One was called Topiltzin, and he didn't want to sacrifice anything but snakes, butterflies, and birds. The other faction was believed in Tezcatlipoca, who believed in human sacrifice. That was a military faction. Well, they thought this fellow that was too peace-loving was lazy. And so they had a little underground revolt against him and drove him out. Now, he had been a culture hero, so he took the name Quetzalcoatl and tacked it onto his own name. So he became Topiltzin Quetzalcoatl. And you remember the story about when the conquistadores came in, that the Aztecs believed that this was Quetzalcoatl coming back because he was white. And really, Topiltzin went up here, and he wasn't a god at all, he was a person. And he established his foot in this place called Chichen Itza. And the two cultures blended together.
And did you say, even though he was more peace-loving and didn't want to sacrifice, human sacrifice, still that became part of the Shishak?
Right. They borrowed from one another, you see. The Toltecs were very militaristic people. And they really imposed their will on the Maya that were there. And were the dominant culture. But the funny part of it was, the interaction with the Maya also affected them, you see, so that you had a blending of the two cultures. And what you have in Chichen Itza, and you can see it when you're there, is really two different kinds of places. This is what the site looks like. And on this side of the road, you have all the old things that were developed before the Toltecs came. And on this side of the road, this is a little road, and it just runs right through the site. And on this site, you have all the things that were built after the Toltecs came. And there's just so much difference. You usually start over here because that's where the parking lot is. And you go over here, and you look at these places, and then you come across the road, and it's just as different as it can be. The architecture is different. There's a different feeling over here, a much more peaceful, calm feeling over here than there is over here. This is kind of I would say, you can feel the stress of this place over here simply from the building. So let me see. I don't know whether I've got you confused or not. Everybody gets confused when they get to Chichen Itza. Mm. Because it's a mixed up place. It's just a mixed up place.
Well, it's a much better known, though. Why is that?
Well, because it's very accessible. Mm. You can fly into Merida, and it's only about 15 miles from Merida. To that. It's also on the way to Cancun.
Yeah, I know people go.
And so you see, it's very accessible. And it's well known. And still there are two stories about how it developed. The historical record, which is in the Book of Chilambalam, that the Spanish wrote down as the oral tradition of the people told it. Now you just think for a minute. Haven't we kind of toned up our history also to suit ourselves? Can you think of any historical records that we've kind of glossed over a little bit to try to make ourselves look better?
Well, Custer's Last Stand.
Yeah. History books? There's a big push on now that to rewrite the history books and tell it like it really was. You see, what we did to the Indians is nothing to be proud of in our country. And we censor the Spanish for what they did to the Indians of Latin America. But we were cruel in our own way to them also. Well, to go back to where we are here, you come down and you get to
about this time, this, the Toltec and the Maya together just started declining again. And that's the way civilizations go. They begin, they grow, they flower, stresses are built in, rivalry is built in, and they fall. It has happened over time.
I still feel that.
They, what?
There's still a few Maya left.
Oh yes, yes, the Maya still are there. They didn't disappear. They're still there. But their civilization declined as a civilization. Mm-hmm. And they went through a period called the decadent period. And when the Spanish got there, what they saw still was so awesome to them that they could hardly believe that it had been built by the people that they were, that were living there then, because of course the people that were living there then were just the ragtag bunch that was left over, you see. The highly developed, sophisticated civilization was gone. And they just drifted away from the big ceremonial centers and they just left them there. And the brush and the growth just took over. Now, this place was never really covered up with jungle, and neither was Uxmal up there. It was always visible. Now, back in here, all of this is full of brush. And when you go to walk from here over to this place, you think a little bit, because the path is narrow and there's lots of growth coming up in there. It is a jungle, and still it isn't the high canopy jungle. It's a brushy kind of jungle. So the Itza, interesting people, but also puzzling people.
Also what?
The Itza were puzzling people, as well as interesting people. Well, let's look at a few of these slides that I have. I don't have awfully many, but I can tell you about them as we go along.
Were they sun worshippers or?
Oh yeah, why don't you leave the light for a minute? They had a whole panoply of gods. Very, very important to them was the rain god. And you can understand why the rain god was so important to them. Because of the lack of water. They also had a sun god. And again, you can see why the sun god was so important to them. Because that was the crops were very important to them. One thing I should tell you about these people, because you'll see their observatory. There's an observatory here called the Caracol. And they had developed their mathematical skills and their astronomical understanding until they had predicted the solar year to be 365.2420. That's how many days there were in a year. And the interesting part of it is that with all the modern equipment that we now have, we have 3,000 or 365.242. So this is how far off they were. And all they used was just sighting. This site, as is true of many sites, it's 17 degrees off true north. Now true north, and then their buildings run 17 degrees off. And that evidently has something to do with magnetic north. And so the only way that they could accomplish their astronomical machinations was to use just sightings. They had no machines. And you can see that this building, and I'll tell you a little bit about its structure as we see it, was built in such a way that when the sun came at a certain place, it would go through certain slots in the building. And they could predict solstices and eclipse. And they had a language that they could express the most sophisticated thought in. They could write it down so that even though to us it just looks like something like this, in a little block, it could be read, and it is now being read. And the last 20 years, they have been working, epigraphers have been working to decipher the glyphs that have been found in the various sites. Now, there's not much in the way of glyphs here. You do find in one place, and I don't think I have it on here, there's a kind of a little place over here that where there are two little posts standing up and a lintel, and the date 879 is on it. And that's the only date that's on here. The only other dating that this site has is through what they find under the ground, and they carbon date it. Mm-hmm. And as I told you, the archaeological evidence just got all screwed up. Just carelessness. Okay, let's see what we have here. We don't have anything. Just flip that up.
Which word is it?
It's in the back. I'll do it.
Yeah, but everybody has trouble finding that.
Sure. Yeah, it's a little difficult.
Wait a minute.
There we go.
There we go. I hit everything well.
I'm going to take you down the countryside in Yucatan. This is the peninsula you're on, and it is a limestone shelf. The only rivers are in the very southern part. All of these people depend for water on cenotes, which are those collapsed limestone surfaces that have the underground water in them.
There must be quite a bit of underground water with all that vegetation. I mean,
well, it's the rainy season. Right now it's the rainy season. This is August.
So it's not like southwestern United States.
No, no, it's scrubby. It's not high canopy jungle, but it's scrubby. It's hot and it's humid. Hot and humid. But if you want to wash your face, you've got to have water either out of a cistern or you have to have it out of a cenote. If you want something to drink, you either have to catch rainwater. At this particular of time here. Now, if you were in a city, you could go to the faucet and turn it on. See. But these people are rural people, and they, to get their water, have to get it from the cenote, or they have to get it from rainwater. I want you to notice that little standard sticking up there. Those of you who were here last night, you already have seen that. That marks the path that goes into someone's home. And they have that there so they can find it. Because it gets overgrown so fast. They cut the brush back from the road with a machete.
There's another object there.
Beg your pardon?
There's another to the other side of it, a little black thing on two white poles.
Well, I think that might be a nest of some kind, probably.
Oh.
But the thing that's standing up that has pieces of plastic on it is a marker for someone's path that goes mm-hmm. into their home.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it looks like. It's brush covered. And you can see that could cover things up, but anything that was tall would stick out. This is a Maya home. They still live like this. They speak their own dialect, Yucatec. And if you are in the area and you're used to hearing Spanish and you hear this other language, it's right away, it hits your ear and you think, what's going on here? But they speak still Nahuatl or Yucatec. This is another home. You can see they're thatched. They're built from, some of them from posts that come down, pilings, and some of them are an adobe, a mixture of mud and lime. In the morning, if you get up early and you get in your car and you go chugging out to see what's going on, this is what you would see. In the middle there, there's a woman bent over, and she's bent over a big black kettle. What she's doing, she's already been to the market, and it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and she's cooking her meat for the day. Because it gets very hot. The men go out to work at dawn, and she's getting her meat cooked. Very old pre-classic pyramid. It goes back to about the year 300. And it's right in a village. You can see that you can see what it must have looked like. But they go about their business and they don't pay any attention to it. And the woman is wearing traditional Maya clothing there. She has a huipil on, she's carrying things on her head. And those three people over there at the edge are talking about my friend and me, because it was very hot. Mm-hmm. And we had just been climbing all over that thing, and they thought, ooh, those crazy, those crazy people from the United States.
I saw a gate here on the wall. Do they lock it up at any time so people can't climb up? I said, I saw a gate there in the wall.
Well, they don't pay any attention to it. They're proud of it. They're proud of it because a gentleman saw us walking over there, and he came over and asked who we were, and he said, I'll take you and show you something else. But I took that out. Now, this is in the area of Chichen Itza, and the people who built this pyramid were contemporary with the people of Chichen Itza.
Were they built as a worshipful?
Yes, it was a temple, yeah. Used for ceremonial. We'll go back, and you can see that it had stairways going up. It also, there may have been masks on there. It's fairly large. You can tell by looking at the people, and you can walk all the way around there, and you can see that these places are. It goes all the way around that same configuration.
Was it hollow?
Now we're at Chichen Itza.
Hmm?
She said, are they hollow?
Are they hollow? No, they have a rubble core. They're built with smashed rocks.
Oh, it was on the outside?
Mm-hmm. And then the same thing with this building right here. It would have a rubble core, and then they would cut the stones and shape them up against that rubble core. Now, I'm going to point out some things to you that are strictly Toltec. And I think I'll have to walk up here to show you. This is a heart right in here, and this is an eagle, and this eagle is holding a heart, and he's going to eat that heart. This is typically Toltec carving. This was called the Temple of Venus. It has four stairways, one going up this way, one going up that way, and then the other two corresponding across from that. And it was used for ceremonials. Notice the serpent's head, the open mouth here.
Are they kind of like gargoyles?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But to them, the feathered serpent had two different meanings, and that's quite interesting. In the beginning, when it was strictly Maya, and there was no mixture in there, the serpent represented literature and learning, along with immortality. Because the serpent loses his skin every year, you see, and has rebirth. And then when Topiltzin's group got mixed in there with it, Topiltzin must have changed his mind on the way to Chichen Itza, because no more did he believe in sacrificing just snakes, birds, and butterflies. He was into people by the time he got to Chichen Itza. This is what they call the Temple of Kukulcan, and Kukulcan is the Itza name for Quetzalcoatl. This is 90 feet tall. There are 91 steps in each one of those stairways, and there are four of them. Now, if you take 4 times 91, you get 364, right? And the 365th step is the one that goes into the temple. So there's significance here insofar as the solar year is concerned.
Has there been reconstruction on that?
Beg pardon?
Has there been reconstruction on that?
Yes, this was on the other side, and I'm sorry that I didn't take that photo too. They didn't reconstruct it, and you can see just what it looked like. It's got bushes growing on it and trees growing on it, just real scrubby. Down here you see that serpent with his open mouth. And this is quite a walk up there, folks. There was a woman ahead of me carrying a yellow parasol. I'll never forget that. And I thought, if that woman with the yellow parasol can get up there, I think I can get up there. So, but it's when you get in there, there are several rooms in the temple and some interesting carvings in the room. Inside this temple, there's another one just like it.
That's very steep.
In other words, yes, this one was built right on top of the other one. And that was quite common with all of these people of the Maya culture, from the northern part clear down to the southern part. At the end of the 52-year cycle, or when a new king was coming into power, they'd build something right on top of the other one. And so what archaeologists do, they just take their machinery and they drill into the temple. And you can find those different layers in there just by drilling in. In this one, you go around behind, I'm going to try to, no, you can't see it. You go around behind this stairway and there's a door. And you go into the other temple. You climb up this miserable little stairway that's just about like this. And you can get up to the inner temple. And in the inner temple is one of the things that the Toltecs brought. From the idea, that is, from Tula in Mexico. If you had seen the Tula pictures that I showed, you'd recognize it. The idea of a Xacmul. Do you know what a Xacmul is? It's a funny little figure about so high that looks like a man reclining, and he's holding on his stomach a bowl, and that bowl was used for sacrificial blood or sacrificial hearts. But when you get inside there and you go into that inner temple, there's a Xacmul in there. And there's also a jaguar with painted red, and he has jade eyes. It's real strange. In the background, over here to the left, you see the Temple of the Warriors. Now, in Tula, in Mexico, they have an identical place, just like this, where you have the colonnades here, forming a kind of courtyard. And so, now remember, we're in the Toltec part of Chichen Itza. We haven't crossed the road, see? We're still in the late years, the years after the Toltec came, which would be from the 900s up to the 1200s. I keep losing this thing. But this is a very beautiful temple and an interesting one to look at. We're going now to the ball court. And again, you see the serpent's head. This is the largest ball court. And you'll have to look at my still pictures to see the ball court, because the one that I took of the full court didn't turn out. We're going to come around the corner here and come past this carving, and then we're going to go that way, and the ball court is 450 feet long.
I wonder how they fasten that serpent on there.
How they did what?
How they fasten it on there.
Oh, they pull out a tenon. It's just, it has a little round thing like a spool.
Oh.
And they drill in. And they're pretty much using stone tools still. Uh-huh. They drill in and then they put it in there.
Uh-huh.
They call that tenoning it in. mean, you think that this is 1,000 years old, it still looks pretty good, doesn't it?
And this is limestone.
Now here you have, we're up on top of, I'm going to back up and show you. You see this incline right here? There's a stairway that goes up there. It's the steepest stairway I've ever climbed. And the stairway goes to the Temple of the Jaguar. And that was a reviewing stand for the dignitaries that came to watch the ball game. Now the ball game that was played here was played for in deadly seriousness because it had religious connotations. It was part of their ceremonial rite. And the captain of the losing team was often sacrificed. And some of the carvings will show you that. I'm not sure that I have it here, but you'll see one on the still pictures. Let's look again at the Temple of the Jaguar. You go inside there between those two giant serpent heads, and the column that goes up is the body of the serpent, and then he has rattles up on the top, and that holds up the roof. When you go inside there, there's a mural. It's fading quite badly, but you can see what it's supposed to be, and it is a mural depicting the arrival of the Toltec. And they are coming in canoes, and they are attacking the Maya. So you see, that's substantiation for the fact that there was an invasion by a foreign culture. It wasn't just the jolly good old Itzah coming back to pick up where they left off. This is the cenote of sacrifice. It's I would say about an eighth of a mile from the ball court. And this was a place where priests officiated over sacrifices. All of the sacrifices that went into this well, there's water down there, were not people. People came and they brought precious objects and threw them in. It was dredged in the 1930s, and a man found 30,000 pieces of stuff down there, in addition to bones. And he said that it represented what he thought was 2,000 years of culture, just by looking at the pieces that were picked up from this well. You can walk down a stairway to the base of the well. Can you see some people down there? And they have bathing suits on.
So is all the children, are the articles out of the well now?
I didn't hear you there, Lot.
Are there still articles in the well?
Well, I suppose there still might be. There was a great deal of sand and mud in the bottom. But it was dredged out and he took out all he could. The sad part of it is that all of those pieces, instead of being given to the Mexican government, which they should have been, they were taken to the Peabody Museum in Harvard. And they were sent around in 1984. They went on exhibit in the United States and traveled from place to place. There is a push now to return some of those things to the country that they belong to. We've crossed the road. And we're in the old part of Chichen. This is the part that developed from the year 500 up to the time when the Toltec got there. The Toltec did some remodeling here, however, and they changed some things. But you can see that it's built on a terrace, and then there's another terrace, and then you go up to the little round place. You can get in the little round place. When you get in there, you look around for a stairway, and there isn't one. But there's a little square hole in the ceiling, and it's about 7 feet up, and you're wondering how you're going to get up there if you want to see what's up there, because it says that you can go up there. So along comes somebody else, and they give you a boost up is how you get up there. And you can go clear up to the top. Now, those openings are oriented to the cardinal points. And that's where they did their sighting, where they were able to establish that the solar year was 365.2420. And our mathematicians found that it was 365.224. So they were only just two ten thousandths off. An amazing thing. It's a Montana scout, isn't it? This is a little bit closer look at it. You should see a serpent there on the balustrade. Can you see him up there? You can also see how the vegetation keeps eating away at these things. They have people constantly scraping that off to keep these from just being devoured by the vegetation. It's because it's so humid. Anything will grow there. This building is most unusual because it has what you call a double roof cone. You can't see it too well in the photograph. It also has a step fret design. A fret is just a straight piece of cut stone that is put together in a geometric design. Now if you have a good imagination, you can see a chalk mask in here. This is their god of rain. See his eyes and his nose, and these are his fangs. Here's another one over here, and there's another one over here. And this they call the Red House. And the reason they call it the Red House is that this band was painted red. And you can see little pieces, little bits of red paint there if you get up close to the house. I keep losing myself. It's very hot here, people. Very hot and real brushy, except where it's cleared off so that you can walk. But you can go way up in there and go into the rooms. Fascinating place. This is the oldest building on the site. And it goes back to the year 465. And they've established that from carbon 14 dating. There is no date in the building. It's called the Akhazib. That's what they call it. And it was a residential area. They think that it might have been a residence for people in training to be priests. They believe that in this extensive area that lies around the central group there, that there were many residences because they have found the foundations. This is all limestone that this is built from. Makes sense, doesn't it? This is a thing called the nunnery. They named it and then they stuck a little something up there to prove that it was. The Spanish named it. They dug a little hole in here to see what was there. This is the piece of this particular section that they call the iglesia, the church. Now, I think that the Maya would just turn over if they knew that they were calling this the church, because I'm sure that's not what they called it. These are chalk masks on the corner, the little snout that comes out like this. And this is the one eye. The other one's around the corner. These are shells. To them, the shell had something to do with immortality. You know, the shell is left when the snail rolls, and so on. These are stylized serpents. You also see an undulating serpent motif here. This is the roof comb. And in the roof comb, you also have a chalk mask here, one here, and part of one here. The rest of it fell off. This is the annex to the nunnery. And again, you see that repeated chalk mask there. This is a mat design that you find quite often. These are cut stones, and there is no mortar in them. They have been cut so that they hold together. Very dark in that place.
Is that thick walls?
I didn't hear you.
Are the walls thick?
Yes, they're very thick. And the room is very dark. And it's very damp. And I don't see how anybody could... it had to have been used for ceremonials more than anything else. This building to the right there that they call the nunnery, the inside of it looks as though it had rooms that could be used and that they must have been used for habitation. But they do think that the priests might come here and stay here during a ceremonial time, but that this was not their residence. There you see that the facade of that iglesia much more clearly. Can you see the shells now here
mm-hmm.
and over there?
Mm-hmm.
There is a piece of a diving god here, and you see that often in Maya sites. There would have been a head here and another piece coming down here, but they're missing. Now I'm going to take you to another place. During this time that was called the decadent period, when there was rivalry between the groups, there were three groups that decided they would get together and they would try to form an alliance. And it was a group called the Xiu, X-I-U, and they had lived at Uxmal. And there was the group of the Itza, who lived at Chichen Itza. And then there was a group called the Kokom. And they decided that if they got together and made an alliance, that they would be able to withstand any other pressure that came from the outside. And things went along pretty well for about 100 years. And they established a seat of government in a place called Mayapan. But then, you know how things happened. You know how it happened in Russia not too long ago? There was an underground plan to overthrow the government, and that's what happened there. There was dissension between the people who were representing the three cultures, and eventually the thing fell apart, and that was the end of Mayapan. And this is Mayapan. No, it isn't. We're still at Chichen Itza. And these are worms, people. And that is a tree. I've never been so shocked in my life. I was coming back on this jungle trail, and there was a man standing there, and he's looking up at the tree like this, and I said, "What is that?" And he said, "Lady, those are worms." And they were yay, and as fat as your finger. And I think they're in a mating position here, just crawling. Just, it was a mat of worms, and it was that long. Isn't that interesting? Worms, people, those are worms. Those are Chichen Itza worms.
You need a big fish hook.
What?
You need a big fish hook for those.
Oh, look at them. They were beautiful, and I did touch them. They were soft, just like our, they felt like velvet. That's what they felt like. See the man's hand? See, he was a sissy. He had a stick and he was trying to move them. Now we're going to go to Mayapan. Now what you need to notice here is that things aren't so well done. They're in their decadent period, and the architecture is not as good. You see the chalk masks still, don't you? But there have been a few new little critters added in there. But the remains here are not nearly as... you can tell that the architecture was not as precise. But we've got the serpent, right? This site has not been excavated. It's just all overgrown with stuff.
Was it hard for you to get so many slides without including tourists?
There's nobody here.
Nobody there?
Nobody was here but us. It was my friend and I, another woman and I. We, for about 5 years, we rented a car and traveled the Maya area and the Mexican area. And we're the only ones here.
That's unusual, isn't it?
Well, not here. This is back out of the way. Just like that Akon Cay place. People don't go there, you see, because it's not fancy. Chichen Itza is kind of awesome because of all the big things, and many of them are. But to have real fun, you've got to catch all these little places, too. And this one is hidden in the bushes, and there was no one there. Well, right about the time that we were here, and I hadn't yet taken a photo of the Great Pyramid, the clouds rolled up. And I thought, oh boy, it's going to rain, I don't have my raincoat. So I went and got under a big tree. And my friend called to me from a long distance away, and she said, "You fool, get out from under that tree." And it was a violent thunderstorm. So we stood out in the rain and got very wet. This is the side of that same building that you saw. And this is how the roots tear things apart. They just intertwine among the structure and rip it to pieces. You can see it was raining, right? And you can see I'm still under the tree. I'm still under the tree. There. Now, I think that you might enjoy now looking around here. Was I supposed to have done something with that? Okay. Mm-hmm. You might enjoy looking at some of these still pictures now. You can see some good pictures of the ball court. You'll also see something, many other things that I didn't have on the slides. You'll also see a rattlesnake in the road.
Wait, went over?
No, it was dead.
Why did they call it the nunnery?
What?
Do they
the nunnery. That was named by explorers. They have done that on all the sites, and the Maya people don't like that at all. They don't like that because they know it isn't a nunnery. This is another site called Oba, and it's very close to Chichen Itza.
Now, it's the pyramid that you showed us that has the two steps restored. That is the Great Pyramid.
That is what they call the Temple of Kukulcan. That is their big pyramid on that side.
Yeah.
But it was built during this period right here. Mm-hmm. The ball court is quite startling when you see it. It's a football and a half long, football field and a half, 450 feet. And if you stand at one end, there's a temple on each end, but if you stand at one end and you say, "It is now 8 o'clock, they can hear you in the other end. The acoustics are very strange. Everybody tries it. There'll be people standing there saying something to somebody that they haven't done. I don't understand.
The same voice that you just said?
Yes.
Why did they build so steeply the steps going up when it's extremely difficult to go up by?
Well,
why did they keep it at that?
I don't know. I can climb something like this without any problem. This is No Hole in Coban. It's about 200 feet high. But you see, it's not so regular.
Yeah.
But it's that regularity that spooks you. You don't dare look more than 3 steps ahead. Yes, their feet are smaller than ours.
Yeah.
By several.
Yeah.
And when you come down, you do the same thing. You don't turn around and look down because you'd be like a goner if you did. So. At least I would.
No handrails.
No handrails.
Yeah, I don't know if I could handle them.
No
handrails.
How much did a block of it cut stone weigh?
It's got to be very, very heavy.
And they used the same cut stone appear that they did last night.
They were an amazing people. They had developed skills that just kind of boggle your mind over time. And you know that it must have been something that it was a craft that was handed down to people over generations.
The way the carry things up.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Bend without bending their knees.
Well, they don't. They just walk along like it's nothing.
Very much bumping.
She said yes, but.
Is that right?
Yeah. I wonder if there isn't.
When people garden, when you talk, you save your back. You know, so you bend your knees. Nope. Everybody bends.
Just like in that picture, you know, they bend and bend and back. And that's how they do their gardening, too. Bend right.
Straight back when you miss or around it.
No, not just straight, just almost.
Straight, and not stand like this and do, and even legs together sometimes. I mean, like that lady.
Like that lady was.
Yeah, exactly.
You and I would bend at the knees. But just like that.
I think they're wonderful physical specimens, for one thing. They don't eat all kinds of junk. They get lots of exercise.
Thank you very much. That was interesting.
Yes, thank you. But the eats are not easy to understand because they don't tell it the way it is.